My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear, and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break, and stay retro. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary cultural and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and I'm with my fan favorite super guest. I feel like I invent new titles for every episode, and that's not a problem. But fan favorite super guest, Luis Aguasuas, is back, calling in from the home state of New York, where you're at for now. Welcome back to the show, Luis. How you doing?
I'm chilling. You know, I'm just over here enjoying this fall weather, enjoying a blue sky here in New York, just looking out my window, and I can see the Empire State Building in all its glory, which is not the best skyscraper the Chrysler Building is, but, you know, you you know, you kind of can't really choose your, you know, which skyscraper you look at from here, because rents are just too damn high.
I wanted to do the dumb touristy thing and actually go to the top of that when I was there. But, you know, I've already vented about not actually making the New York trip because I wasn't sure how to commute there. I looked up an Uber and it was like $100. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. And realized that there was a train that I should have done that would have been much cheaper. But lesson learned. Hopefully I can return to New York in the future and I'll do the touristy things. But I actually would like to go to the top of the Empire State Building. I just think that would be, you know, cool to do. It's cheesy, but it's something I want to do.
It's one of those things. I mean, I take it for granted since I live here, but I've done it. It is pretty expensive, though. That's the killer for it. It's not. I think it's worth it, especially if the line isn't that long. But the price recently has just like been so high that it's like you're just like, yeah. And you can go to other places, but you might even get like a better view. I mean, it's not the Empire State Building, but it's.
Those are things I actually did not consider. I didn't realize that there would be a line, and I also didn't realize it would cost money. I just thought it was like a touristy thing. Like they let, you know, you go up and then they try and sell you some, you know, t-shirts or memorabilia to make some cash on it. But otherwise it's just the roof of a building. Like, do you really need to charge for that? I did not think that was how that works. So maybe, I mean, I still like to do it, but I'm maybe less excited about the idea of doing it now.
A pro New Yorker tip for any, for yourself and any listener of the podcast is there are quite a few rooftop bars that entry before a specific time is free, and you can go up there and just look at and you, I mean, you're up like 400, sometimes even 500 feet, like, so you're getting a pretty good look at the city, and that's a clutch move right there. You know, you might even like pick up a drink, a shitty expensive drink, but still like under $20, and you know, look at the, enjoy the skyline from there. If you want like the pro tip, all right, you need to blur this out, because this should only be for you know, for Patreons or buying members, is you go to New Jersey.
No. But, I'm going to New York. I want to be in New York. Okay. I don't care how close they are to each other and how essentially on top of each other they are. I am visiting New York. I want a New York experience.
But right, well, you will get, that's the thing, the best views of New York City are directly across the river in New Jersey. So you go to like Hoboken or West New York / Weehawken, and at that point there's specific areas that like are on the Palisades, which is like a really small like mountain range, which is like right there. And the views from there are, I mean, it's probably one of the best views you can get of a city, period, anywhere in the world. And that you can do it ostensibly free. So, but you know, I do understand that New Jersey sucks. You know, you don't have to tell me. It's not lost on me. It's a New Yorker. But
I'm a child who grew up, as the kids at school were talking about their favorite basketball teams, I was like, dude, I don't really know much about basketball. What am I going to do? I went home, of course, had a collection of basketball cards, because that's just what a kid has in the early 90s. I started flipping through them, and I landed on a Patrick Ewing card, and I told myself, cool, Patrick Ewing's my favorite player. He plays for the Knicks, so the Knicks are going to be my favorite team. And that's how I became a diehard Knicks fan. Still am, for life. And so, yeah, New York, you know, all day. New Jersey sucks. I know all of the things. So, but I get what you're saying, though, that outside looking in view would get you a nice, like, scenic, panoramic, you know, large scale, like macro view of the city, which would be a nice, you know, kind of thing, a touristy thing to do. But then you got to get back in there. And, you know, I wanted to go to Madison Square Garden and just take a picture right outside of there as well. That was the free thing I wanted to do, for sure. That's number one thing when I get there is picture outside Madison Square Garden. You know, then maybe travel down, see 30 Rock, walk to the Nintendo store, and then, you know, from there, figure it out. You know,
that's all pretty close.
I'll get some pizza.
That's all pretty close to each other, too. So you can do that, like, in like half an hour. You can take a picture of Madison Square Garden, be 30 Rock, and then the Nintendo store is at 30 Rock. So,
yeah, I can, I mean, we can say this safely, obviously. Long Island Retro Gaming Expo is the premier and greatest retro video game expo on all of the earth. So, you know, in the future, obviously, if they're looking for guests and everything, of course, I'll gladly accept and be ready and willing to go to their fantastic, borderline, amazing, greatest retro experience of all time. So this isn't fluff. I'm not just saying these things. Genuinely mean it. So there you go. Come back to New York, Darren. And go to Long Island.
Yeah, you definitely need to. You need to do that, and you need to get your New York trip. Hell, you should even go even longer and then go to the Strong Museum in upstate New York too. So
yeah, there's some stuff I want to do. I need to obviously go there during the NBA season as well, and seeing a game at Madison Square Garden would obviously be, you know, bucket list. I can die when I'm dead or when I'm done, you know, that type of thing.
$300
The Knicks are good.
See,
hey, that's nothing. Give me the worst seat in the arena, and that's fine. I would be happy about that, right? Especially now the Knicks are great. Like, no, I get it. I'm there. All right. Well, that we spent a couple of New York minutes talk about New York there. So for all you non-New York fans, sorry, but thank you for listening. But at least you got some pro tips if you ever do visit. And I know what I'm going to do when I'm there next. But let's jump into some this or that's. How about that? You ready to go?
Yeah, hit me. What a this or that.
Sonic or Knuckles? To follow up on our last conversation.
Damn, that's hard because they both suck.
No, they don't. One's voiced by Stringer Bell from The Wire. I mean, obviously, Knuckles is.
I mean, coolest. That's back in the day. But yeah, now it's like Idris Elba. But she's fine. I'm just talking about them as like actual like video game characters. All right, yeah. If we're going by, because both in the video games, they both suck. But if we're going by who plays them, you know, who voices them, yeah, Knuckles.
Graphics or frame rate?
Frame rate,
yeah.
But none of that 120 FPS nonsense.
Oh, yeah, a little unnecessary, but yeah.
Yeah.
Give me 60. That's fine. Mario Tennis or Mario Golf? Have I asked you that before?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. So Mario Tennis or Mario Golf?
Fuck. I would say golf just because. Fuck. But both of them have those really awesome.
Yeah.
The Game Boy Color. That's
the thing. And the advanced ones too.
Yeah. That might be the hardest one. I said golf, so I'm going to stick with golf, but. It's either, you know, they're both great.
Both solid. Yep, yeah. That's the point. Try and get you to make a tough choice. But all right, that's this or that. So let's keep our brains mushy and get into an icebreaker question. But what game did you wrongly judge by its cover or its title?
Oh, so many games. I'm just going to say this. As a moron, as a child, Bubsy. I thought Bubsy was going to be cool. Played that and really thought that video games were really stupid, like in a bad way. I'm saying this as a child. You know what it takes for a child who loves mascot platformers and irreverent humor to play something and be like, wow, this sucks. And maybe this whole thing relating to this sucks. So, Bubsy, I hate you. I know that new game looks promising. I had a chance of playing it. I didn't just because I just hate Bubsy that much. But I don't even know. The new Bubsy can be the greatest game ever made, and it will not redeem that series in my heart. Or in my mind. So, Bubsy, fuck you.
Some people love their mascot platformers. Some people hate them. And we've just found where your heart is. Okay, we get it. We got it. Do not present Bubsy to Luis in the future. You've been warned.
I mean, the Dragon Quest games are also one, like Dragon Warrior. I think those, I don't personally think that those, that the U.S. Box covers are as good as the Japanese ones. But I think a lot of that's like a personal taste. I understand why they did it, but if I would have, if I was into that type of stuff and I saw those, I wouldn't have picked those up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, there's definitely, obviously, they lean away from the, like, original character art and, like, game art for the creation and the development of the game. Like, they lean hard opposite of that when they brought those to North America and Europe back in the day. Now, obviously, we get parody. Like, we understand the world is connected via the internet, everything, and we understand where these games, you know, this original intent is able to maintain that throughout its worldwide releases. But yeah, back in the day, they'd almost try and like reimagine games and, you know, you kind of got what you got. And you didn't quite know maybe where some of those roots lied, but I love that old, you know, give me all that Toriyama art. Give me all of the Amano art. Give me all of the, all that. Like you shouldn't try and change that over with, you know, just generic US counterparts that we've gotten.
No, he shouldn't.
The but yeah, we did it. That's the icebreaker. We're here and we're ready for the main event. This is what the people came here for. This is why everyone still listening is still listening. They want to hear the answer to this question. So, Luis, do you have a favorite collector's edition or deluxe edition of a game? And do you collect other memorabilia from your favorite games?
All right, I'm going to cheat.
So I'd love to know the answer.
I'm going to cheat here, and I'm going to pick a collector's edition that has 12 games. 12
games. The Sonic Mega Collection?
No. No, that's actually pretty good. But no, Sonic Collections are good. The Mega Man Collection. A lot of the Street Fighter stuff's also pretty good that they've been... I mean, there's a lot of great stuff right now. Like, you know, there was a point in our lives where going to collector's edition wasn't really a thing. And when they were, it just wasn't, they were few and far between, and they were all really about just retro game, which was great. I remember the Phantasy Star collection, and that was pretty neat when that came out, and a few other things. But now we have collector's editions where it's just more than just a game and assets as well. Like there's actually, you might even get booklets or book tie-ins where you would, where the developers will actually discuss the making of the games, just really like nerdy, like sicko stuff, which is really cool to see. And so my choice is going to be the Annapurna Interactive Deluxe Limited Edition Collection for the Nintendo Switch. That's like a IM 8-bit, extremely absorbently expensive one, which is like $200, and supposedly they only made 2,500 of these. So how's that for a limited edition? It comes with 12 games, and most of them are fantastic. A few of them I'm like, yeah. But, you know, you have Donut County, which is great. The Rogua puzzle game, that's pretty good. I don't know if I pronounced that well. Hindsight, I Am Dead, If Found. I know people like this. Probably one of the great games ever made, which is Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition. That's on there, which is like that in its, that alone. Neon White, which is fantastic. Sayonara Wild Hearts. That's also great. Solar Ash and the Artful Escape and the Pathless and What Remains of Edith Finch, which is a great so-called walking simulator. So 12 games all in that. Plus, it comes with in a cartridge, in one Nintendo Switch cartridge, with a booklet that has a foreword by the founder of Annapurna, Nathan Gary, which just discussed like the studio's history and, you know, some of the games and statements on each game by the folks who made them. So it's it's really neat. It's just super expensive. I wish something like this was more widely available. I know that the folks at Lost and Cult, they're having their editions, which should be coming out, if not later this year, earlier next year, which is going to be something similar to that, but with an individual game. And I mean, I interviewed, what's his name? Ryan Brown, who's a marketing director at Lost and Cult for Super Jump. I interviewed him back in June. And we talked a bit about that. And those might be, once those come out, those might be my definitive like answer to this question. But in the meantime, I will say it's the Annapurna Interactive Deluxe Limited Edition Collection for the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, that's a good set. It's funny, as you were naming through all the games and you gave it a, you know, swipe left, swipe right, you know, hot take there. I think with my count, you were yay to six of them and nay to six of them. Is that fair? What do you think about half of them you're not as enthused about?
I'm not as enthused about, but I think they're all like worthy games. And a lot of these are, you know, they're fairly brisk experiences that you can play them and you can be like, yeah, this was cool. Or even if you don't enjoy them, it's like it's time well spent because it's not, you know, you're not spending like 30 hours on each of these. The thing is, like, the games here that are great are some of, like, not only some of the best games, in my opinion, they are very foundational in regarding the specific style of game. Like, What Remains of Edith Finch, that's if you like, for all that, like, you know, narrative-driven so-called walking simulators, that's probably the game on there. That and the Stanley Parable, those are the two that really popped to mind where I'm like, those are the two one should play to get to know that specific style of game. Kentucky Route Zero, that's the best story driven game ever. Some of the best writing in a video game. Neon White, fast paced action, just a really great game. It's just real, just those three alone. And to me, it's worth it. The price, I don't know if it justifies the price, honestly. But you know, what is price now? Like, just to be fair, it's just, who knows? Like, everything's so expensive now. Even if it's justified, even if like the cost is justified where it comes to like production of it, it's still, you know, it's still money. And, you know, and some people just, due to circumstances, just don't have that much access to it. So, but the games themselves speak for themselves, though.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Well, that is a good choice. And I do like a good book, you know, good writing. Obviously, we've done some writing ourselves, and you're contributing to the next 32 bit library book as well. So I love it when a good book companion or some like a meaty, you know, behind the scenes type of thing is made. Like those Lost and Cult books, they're fantastic. I mean, I just got that Lock On number 6 in the mail, with like the big like a mono artwork and interview in there, but there's a ton of great stuff in there. And then I finally ordered a book on Dead Space called Make Us Whole, which is kind of like a look back at that whole series and everything. I just ordered that
homie,
a couple weeks back. So wait.
My homie wrote that, Elijah. So that's great. Really? Yeah. So
cool. Yeah.
That's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. They do a lot of great things there. And then the Animal Well, like Design Works, I have that pre-ordered as well. Like I love what they do. Austin Colts, some good folks who work with good people and put out some good stuff. So, check out their stuff. I know you mentioned I Am 8-Bit as well. They've always do some fun collections and gaming related things as well too. So lots of good stuff to dive into and absorb. But yeah, if you ever do a book in a part of like a collection or some type of special edition thing, I'm always on board. I love a good book. that is all we've got then for this. Luis, anything you want to share or say to the listeners? You know, should they follow you somewhere? Should they check things out? Anything to look forward to that you've got planned in the future? This is kind of your space to kind of promote yourself.
Yeah, I mean, they can follow me on Blue Sky. Just check my writings out online. I'm mainly writing on and on Winnable now, so you can check that out. I recently wrote a piece about Matt Ault and Anime NYC. Y'all can check that out. It's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it. So it's fairly positive, which is good when you look at the state of the world. So,
yeah. All right. Well, check out Luis. Give him a follow. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again next week with more random gaming conversation. So thanks, everyone. Y'all have a good one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.